You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, welcome here to my couch, as you always are on Wednesdays, wherever you're at listening. We are talking about an amazing subject that I have never covered on my show in the past 15 years that we've done it, amazingly enough. Why is that? I think a lot of people don't really want to address the reality of the situation. I think a lot of people are fearful to talk about it because of the possibility of the what ifs. And you'll understand why in just a bit. We're talking about the issue of when our beloved spouse or partner undergoes the onslaught of a chronic illness. And how can a couple's love survive through all this? Actually, almost 40 million Americans are taking care of, ailing spouses or partners and or family members as well, you know. And if you are the child of such partners, it's really tough to watch as well, struggling with the issue. You understand the heart-wrenching difficulty that you've gone through. Well, today my special guest is a devoted and loving caregiver to her husband, and she was. And she's talking about her latest book, which we'll bring up in just a bit, and how she coped and got through all of it with grit and grace. She's also going to be talking about her husband's heroic work to heal back to good health, as well as important tips on how to handle and cope while simultaneously processing, coordinating as a caregiver and a dedicated life partner, spouse, and parent. And of course, without further ado, let my special guest enter our virtual studio, Sarah Cart. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm honored to be a part of it.
Well, many blessings to you for writing this terrific book. So let's bring it up right now. There it is. On My Way Back to You. It is a wonderful story. It is non-fictional. It's her real extraordinary journey of trying to get through and survive caretaking, as well as taking care of your family, Sarah, as well as taking care of your four boys, as
I think raising the four boys prepared me a little bit for the chaos that was caregiving. So
that's for sure. Yeah. You are who I deem as, and I don't have that many on my show, a superwoman. You've done it all. You've had a great career. You've been a writer, many publications in your local area. Of course, you're a mom. Your kids are grown up now, but of four wonderful boys. And of course, your lovely husband who had to go through his battle and his journey of surviving this. And you hung in there through it all. And I love the fact that you give wonderful tips on the positives. And I think this is the reason why a lot of people don't write about this or talk about this, and why I haven't been able to present this information on my show before. It's too scary. And I think a lot of people don't focus on the positives. But thank you for doing that. And I really am amazed at what you've been through, and for sharing your journey of healing and hope for my listeners and viewers as well. And y'all are going to find out about that today. May I also acknowledge co-author Glenn Plaskett. Okay. He's a best-selling author of 30 books and was there to help out. He's also appeared in syndicated columns in most all major publications in the country. You guys made a wonderful book, so I really appreciate it. But it was your story, and I loved reading it. And you talk about your wonderful husband, Ben, who just passed his mid-50s, was unhealthy shortly thereafter. All of a sudden, things kind of fell apart. But I want to ask you first, as I always do all of my guests, what was it that made you kind of want to relive this? Excuse me, and write this book about your journey.
Well, it was a way to process everything that we went through. I'm very lucky that the story has a happy ending, but going through it, there were so many twists and turns and times when it could have ended up badly. And some of the places where it really broke down are actually the places why we're still here. So I needed to process that. this went wrong. How did it turn into something so wonderful? It was a journey that I just needed to figure out after the fact. How did we get from there to where we are now, which is quite miraculous and wonderful.
Oh, it's beautiful. And maybe you could sort of set up the story here in your book, and I'm not going to give a lot of spoiler alerts, but the good news is your husband's with us and you get him through it. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. The short version is that Ben was just past his mid-50s when he was diagnosed with an incurable autoimmune issue.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. And it was really subtle at first. We were told that there was no cure. We're just going to treat it symptom by symptom. And we'd raised four kids. We were used to dealing with chaos. It was like, okay, fine. Well, just tell us what to do. We'll do it. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, we were not able to keep up with whatever it was that needed to be done.
Right.
After his diagnosis, he dropped 35 pounds without he dropped 35 pounds without really thinking about it. And that was an eye opener. And a couple of years later, he was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. This was after he'd gone through his joints, his tendons, sudden severe hearing loss. I mean, there were so many different elements.
Yes.
But when it got to his heart, that was a real wake up call. And he got a pacemaker, which was wonderful for about 6 months. And then we realized that the pacemaker couldn't keep up with what the disease was doing to him, and we were told we needed to get him on the the list for a heart transplant. So that's what we were doing. And he was pretty actively dying in the winter of 2019, 2020. We had not gotten him on the list yet. It was bad. It was rough. And 2 weeks after the world shut down with the pandemic, his kidneys shut down too. And he ended up, up in the hospital, not yet on the list. Hospital protocol because of the pandemic. I couldn't visit him. He got on the list. Then he was he was not stable enough to stay on the list, was taken off the list on Good Friday, put back on the list on Easter, unstable again, about to be taken off the list a few days later. And a heart was allocated miraculously. That's the first part of the story. The second part of the story is a week later, they called and asked if I knew anything about his fractured left hip, which I vaguely knew. I didn't know it was broken. I knew that he had fallen and bruised his hip. He had admitted that.
Right.
About 3 days before he went in the hospital. But nobody knew. I mean, he was so sick when he went in the hospital, they just put him to bed. So when he came home to me 10 weeks after leaving with kidney failure, he had a new heart. He was in a wheelchair. He was dependent on pain meds. And we needed to wait 2.5 months before they could replace his hip. And it was still COVID. So everything we did was with masks and hand sanitizer. And the COVID tests were still taking 3 or 4 days to get results. So before he could go in to have the special post-transplant biopsies that they do, we would have to drive 1.5 hours to the hospital so he could get a COVID test so they could have the results 3 days later before they took him into the OR to do the biopsies. It was kind of nuts.
And of course they didn't allow visitors.
No visitors, but bless the nurses who facilitated FaceTimes for us.
Yes.
Especially when he was in the thick of ICU delirium. Yeah. And at one point they wondered if maybe he had had a stroke. His mentation was really quirky. And there were times he didn't know who I was.
Sure.
But the nurses were there every time just saying, you know, don't worry about this. He'll come back. He'll find his way back to you. Which was amazing.
What was the initial diagnosis, Sarah?
It's an autoimmune disease called systemic sclerosis. And with Ben, it often presents as scleroderma, which is a hardening of the skin.
Right.
Ben's first symptom, however, was his fingers were swelling. And oh. I happened to notice it because we were at a wedding and he's always been able to whistle just with one hand. And right. actually these two fingers. Right. And we're at a wedding. They've introduced the bride and groom and everyone's clapping and applauding and, right. And cheering. And Ben goes to whistle, but he does it with two hands. And I asked him in the car on the way home, what was that about? And, yeah. Oh, my fingers are swollen. What do you think? I don't know. It's just been a couple of weeks. If you've known someone as long as I'd known Ben at that point, and as well as I'd known him, you knew that a couple of weeks was probably a few months. And then I asked if anything else was going on. He said, well, yeah, my hands change color if I go from hot to cold or cold to hot. Mm-hmm. And so I ratted him out when we went to get our flu shots, and the doctor took blood instead of giving him a flu shot. And they yeah. put him on immunosuppressants right away, which was a blessing. He did not go through the scleroderma stage,
right.
but he went through all the other parts.
Right, right, exactly. Well, that's not necessarily good, and not all symptoms, you know, show up at one time that are described.
Right. And we had to pay attention to them, and he wouldn't tell me about symptoms until he was really sure that they were real, right. better or worse. So,
and of course, your sons were all there, and I loved also the comments in your book that they shared as well and their fears.
That was Glenn's idea. I handed Glenn a pretty raw manuscript, and he was sure. wonderful about saying, Ben's voice needs to be there. Your son's voices need yes. to be there. And so he helped frame that part of it. The boys were scattered all over the country. And because mm-hmm. of COVID, they couldn't come when things got really bad. But they were wonderful about wow. tag teaming with each other and saying, sure. have you talked to mom lately? Or so-and-so yeah. needs to reach out to dad. Did dad give you the phone call at 6 a.m. this morning asking, are you still in your bunker? When he was really loopy. Mm-hmm. So they were wonderful that way. And the other thing that was amazing was until the night Ben went into the hospital, I'd never heard of Zoom. So my first Zoom call was that night with some friends. And now to imagine a time before Zoom is like trying to remember what it was like before I knew how to read. I don't know how I would function without it. So just amazing yes, the way the connections
here technology work.
Yeah.
Oh, you are so right. You know, it's just, it's amazing. By the way, in case you guys just tuned in, my special guest today is Sarah Carr. She's the author of a beautiful book, On My Way Back to You, One Couple's Journey Through Catastrophic Illness of Healing and Hope. It's a wonderful read. It's a heart wrencher, got a good ending, and it gives us all a lot of strength. And of course, I'm calling you Superwoman from now on. So that's Sarah Carr / Superwoman. That's who you are. So can you talk a little bit about what it was like, a typical day for you as a caregiver when Ben came home? And how did you keep all the balls in the air? How were you juggling all that? I can't even imagine.
I had to go from 0 to 60 overnight. He'd been gone for 10 weeks. The hospital and the physical therapists, because he went into rehab for 2 weeks between the hospital and coming home, they were all wonderful about tutoring me online as best they could to prepare me for what I needed to know and what I needed to do. Sure. But he, you know, and it was an adjustment for Ben as well. He came home from 24/7 undivided attention of medical personnel and janitors and nutritionists to just me. Sure. It was a lot of list keeping, a lot of setting timers and setting alarms to make sure that he took his meds when he was supposed to, or that we got up early enough to get to the hospital to get his biopsies done. You'd have to show up an hour early for blood work. I found actually a couple of weeks ago, I was unpacking something that was supposed to be absolutely unrelated to any of this. And in the bottom, there was a bag of stuff that I would take to the hospital. And this was actually the go bag from August 20th, 2020. And it just said what time the alarm had, meds we need to take, a Sharpie marker in case they had to admit Ben, a pair of nail clippers, chargers for his iPhone and his hearing aids. I mean, just the full list of what we needed to get through that day, which started with an alarm set for 3:30 in the morning because I needed to get him up and cleaned up and into his wheelchair and into the car, and hour and a half drive to the hospital. And it was a little bit of PTSD reading the list that I'd put in there. And I handed it to Ben that night and said, what do you think of this? He was like, wow, I don't know how we did it. I said, I don't know either, except we did it together. A step at a time. It was really, it was teamwork and, fierce determination, a refusal to hear, to take no for an answer.
Yeah. So that's exactly right. It's so, as I have experienced, it's really difficult, for me as well. And I'm sure this was your experience to, be an observer and not a feeler, as I put it. In other words, you have to, really get yourself into action, what is needed, follow the lists, make sure the medication's correct, all the doctor's information, pack the go bag, have everything back here somewhere, and then at home, and then you have all the bills you need to take care of. You have all of the other extracurricular activities and errands that you need to do. Difficult trying to not be so involved in your heart and see your loved one suffering and in pain and barely able to walk and speak for that matter. And then it's heartbreaking, but then you have to be stoic and be at the same time, be this observer, right?
Yeah. It was, there were days, I mean, almost every day you're making decisions, really minor decisions and really huge decisions. But like, what time should I set the alarm for? That would be a pretty minor one, a really huge one. And the larger scheme of things is it really practical for me to think we can continue to live in this house? Should I be calling a realtor?
Right.
Handling the insurance paperwork, all of it, just crazy. And in the meantime, the person that I love most in the world, my best friend, the person I would go to with all of these things of, hey, I don't know what to do about this and such, is not there. I mean, he's physically there, but mentally just not. And that was really challenging. My best friend was so deprived of sleep, especially before the transplant, that he was basically, and I said this to the boys, a really well-intentioned, lovely, charming 10-year-old boy. I couldn't really trust him to finish anything. I had to double check that the stuff he was doing at his desk was done properly and completely. One time he paid the credit card bill, except that he didn't, because he never hit submit. He put all the information in and fell asleep before he hit the submit button. That kind of thing happened all the time.
Did they put him on steroids for a while? Was he on any kind?
He did steroids a few times. Yes, he was definitely on steroids after the transplant. Mm-hmm. There were a few times with the autoimmune when he was put on, I think, a steroid push. I can't remember quite what they call it, but they start you on a massive dose of like 10 pills on Monday and 9 on Friday, on Thursday, on Tuesday, and you work your way down to 1.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, bless his heart. So that, those are all such difficult things. And so you learn to balance your responsibilities and as a caregiver, and I know you're a very high performer at everything. And you are a person I can only understand from your book, but also by talking with you, that you want to do everything right. You're not a perfectionist. I don't get that, but you want to make sure that everything, all of the ducks are in a row. And did you beat yourself up sometimes for not being enough? Or
yeah, and there are things about, I might not be a perfectionist, but sometimes I won't do something perfectly. So I was very disappointed in myself when I learned that he had a broken hip and that it happened on my watch and I had missed it. I mean, what kind of responsible caregiver misses something like that? If we had known about his hip, if the hospital, similarly, they did not know about his hip, if anybody had known, he wouldn't have gotten a transplant. Along that same line of things are supposed to work, that there's a way that things are supposed to work.
That's right.
If it hadn't been COVID, if we hadn't been in the midst of a worldwide pandemic, he wouldn't have gotten a heart because, as I mentioned earlier, COVID tests were taking 3 and 4 days to get results. And so the only people, the only people going into the OR at that point were people that the hospital was 99% sure were COVID free, or a car accident victim, or a gunshot wound, or a patient who was in the hospital dying who needs a transplant when an organ becomes available.
So it just kind of
freaked me out. That's part of why I had to write the book, because Ben wouldn't be here if we hadn't had a pandemic. And if we'd known about the hip, he wouldn't be here. So you just kind of have to process. Sometimes wonderful things happen despite mistakes or because of mistakes.
You know, it is true. And I love that attitude that you have. I love the positive attitude. So let's talk about your coping skills and what are some of the things that you had to remind yourself of, you know, during these times. You know, you said sometimes, how could I forget this? Or how could I, you know, let this go? Oh my gosh, this is so important. But you have to say, okay, Sarah, you're a good girl. You can do this, honey. And it takes a lot more than that. So if you could share with us some of the strength building thoughts, behaviors, self-care that you did.
When I am in crisis, I tend to journal almost all the time anyway, but if I'm really in crisis, I journal pretty intensely. I also love to walk. For me, as a writer, for all the years that I just wrote feature stories for the local paper, one of the wonderful things about that is that I need time for stuff to percolate. So I look at all my notes, and then I go be a mom and make dinner and do laundry. And during all those tasks, I'm percolating. And then when I sit back down, the writing comes more easily. So walking is huge for me. And then during the pandemic, the other thing that really saved me was meditating. I typically don't sit still long enough to meditate, but that was true crisis for the world and for me. And it was a huge lifesaver to take 20 minutes a day. And it was actually a meditation series that Oprah Winfrey and Deepak Chopra put out for the world for free. And it saved me at a time when I really needed it. So,
that is a good one too. I've listened to, they have done several, and it is so true, because it's really gently getting you into totally in grounding yourself and, you know, eliminating all those other distractions around you and just being with yourself and, or the higher power that you are as well.
Yeah. And I had a friend who'd been telling me about the series for probably a couple of weeks. And it was right as Ben went in the hospital, my hands were full. I didn't, you know, if you think I have 20 minutes a day, you're really mistaken.
Oh my gosh.
But when I finally did have 20 minutes and sat down that first morning, the message was the power of hope is real. And to sit and think about that for 20 minutes was just such a relief. And then to, over the course of the weeks that followed, taking the time to I thought of everyone we'd ever known and loved that we'd lost. His grandparents, my mother, my brother, best friends of his from high school, aunts and uncles. And I asked all of these people to please, wherever you are in the universe, please come back and focus your light and love on Ben in the hospital. And I just had this cone of light that I could envision. And on his doctors and nurses and everyone who's taking care of him, please keep them COVID free, please. And once he had the heart and there were some issues with his recovering there, I even invited, you know, wherever the donor is, wherever you've ended up, someplace out there in the universe, please come back and make sure that this gift that your loved ones have given to us is going to work. Help Ben adjust to your heart. It was, and when he was really, really loopy about 2 weeks after the transplant, I started getting really specific. Like the one grandfather who was a really business oriented general kind of guy, I had him at Ben's brain. I had the other grandfather who was really loving at Ben's heart, you know, please help him learn to love again. And the other ones, help him think clearly again. One friend sent me a note right after the transplant and said, now that he has a new heart, he has to fall in love with you all over again. It was just a lovely, uplifting thing that got me out of some dark moments.
So. And that is beautiful. Did you know much about the donor?
We know nothing about the donor, except we were told repeatedly, I was told repeatedly, especially in those first weeks when things weren't going quite right, it's a young, strong heart.
Beautiful.
And we did write a letter at Thanksgiving a year and a half later to say, this is what we've been able to do thanks to your family, this family having made this decision in what has to have been the darkest moments of their lives. And we know they got it, but we've never heard back. And I can understand that. They've moved on, or they're dealing with it however they best can. And that's all we can ask. I have had the opportunity, however, Ben and I have, to meet someone who made that decision about giving her son's organs. It was a full circle moment for us. It was someone we knew. We just did not know that part of her story. And she shared it with us a few weeks ago, and it was mind blowing.
And it was mind blowing because he did receive a heart quickly. I mean, it was just beautiful the way it all worked out.
Yeah.
And I really hear what you're saying about, you know, reaching out to loved ones, not only that, but the community and family members and anyone else who might be able to help in their thoughts, loving thoughts, healing thoughts, prayers. You know, that's that whole Maharishi effect thing of, you know, how powerful prayer and positive thought is.
It was huge. And when I let the day he went in to get the transplant, I didn't tell anybody until I knew he was going into the OR, because there's a 10 to 20% chance that this is not going to be
the
solution today.
Right.
And so I sent out an email. I think there were 170 recipients, which meant that over the course of the next 48 hours, I kept getting all kinds of emails. And this is in the thick of the pandemic. This is the middle of April, 2020. And the responses I got that were, this is what I've been praying for, this is the best news I've had since we've been locked down, were just so, I didn't realize that many people were thinking about us and thinking of us and holding us up. And it was hugely powerful.
Right, exactly. You're such a strong person, and I applaud you for writing this book. It's beautiful. On my way back to you, one couple's journey through catastrophic illness to healing and hope, and how she helped heal her husband Ben through all of his diagnoses, one after the other that hit them and the family. And I guess, you know, you talk about focusing on purpose. On the purpose, keep your eye on the purpose. Yes, it's gritty. Yes, you're exhausted. You get frustrated. And there, you know, friend of mine, you know, I've been going through a very similar journey, and a friend of mine said, you must really resent him for getting sick. And I went, oh my God, that was horrible. Don't say that, you know, but there's some little part of our subconscious that says, hey, remember me?
Yeah.
That person that promised to love and to in sickness and in health and is here for you, and you're mad and you're cussing at me and you can't hardly even focus on anything except how to breathe at this particular point. So there, you know, so I loved your idea of, you know, finding this is your purpose right now. And like, this is your purpose. And what, this is another thing, what am I learning from this for my own spiritual and soul growth? And maybe you can share, what are some of those things that you might have learned about you that you never had considered before, Sarah?
I need to be better about trusting my gut instincts. I am, I turned out to be a lot stronger than I ever imagined I could be. Mm-hmm. One of the things, we had the gift of time, even as Ben was getting sicker. Mm-hmm. We called it, he was giving me a tutorial, getting my PhD in how to manage the household. And
yes.
So when he ended up in the hospital, suddenly I'm really doing all the things that he had been preparing me to do in the event of his death.
Wow.
And so I felt it was like a test run.
Right. And
when he got home, the only thing he wanted to do was get back at his desk. He wanted to get back to his desk. He wanted to get back to work.
Right.
And the doctors at rehab had actually called me and said, he's really anxious about this,
yeah,
but he doesn't have the mental capacity to do
right.
it. You're going to need to double check everything he does. And I'm like, for how long? We don't know. You're going to have to figure that out. So that was scary on the one hand. And then a few months later, when he really is back to himself,
right.
off of the painkillers, thinking clearly, I can trust him at his desk. He said, one night at dinner, he said, I need to thank you. You did a great job.
I'm
like, well, you taught me well. But he's like, you also, however, went back and picked up a lot of pieces that I dropped as I got sicker.
Wow.
I mean, I had no idea how messed up some of our accounts were, emails
sure.
he hadn't answered.
Sure.
I had to pick up a lot of pieces. And
sure.
I wouldn't have said a year ahead of that I would have been able, that I would have figured that out. But I did.
Of course you did. And just in an amazing way. Something else that, you share about, the things you learned and also in the process of caregiving and all that, you write in your book, no sugarcoating. You can't sugarcoat, quote, you must be accepting and vulnerable when sharing how the patient is doing and how you're feeling and managing it as a caregiver. Eek, that's really hard to do because you don't want to bring down a lot of the other relatives or the kids.
Right.
The reality of this looks glim, and every day I'm just taking baby steps and praying. And it's very hard to tell the truth all. No sugar.
Yeah. Coating. I mean, you don't want to scare them, but
don't
you
wait,
also,
right?
Yeah, you don't want to scare them, but you also don't have to walk. You don't want to have to walk it back later and say, oh, well, that part where I said he was doing well, I was kind of really wrong. And you need to be here. So right. I tried really, really hard to balance that. Here's where we are. We've also had experience, both he and I, of how easy it is to set up smoke and mirrors, not burden other people with what's going on. And we had done that early on in his journey, but, we reached a point where the smoke and mirrors was not going to be helpful to either one of us. And we just needed to be completely open with what was going on. So.
Gosh, is that true? I remember, and I don't want to categorize it and say it's a guy thing. It's a man thing. It's a husband thing. But he used to tell me, he'd say, this is humiliating. This is, I feel, because he, as your husband is in his mind, and also, I don't know what the business affairs are necessarily, but he's very successful CEO, owner of a company, and he was very involved in banking systems, and I mean, just high functioning financier. And then all of a sudden, that's taken away one day. It's, you have this cancer, and you're going into IV chemo tomorrow morning, or.
Wow.
You're that kind of thing. What, huh? What? And he said to me, and I'm sure your husband said, this is very difficult for me as a man to, I was this super, business person and creating all these wonderful opportunities and supporting the family. And, it's just really hard. Well, it's hard as a woman too, when you're a professional, but I mean, there really is something about, the male who has been the primary, I guess.
Part of how he defined himself. Yeah.
And
that's been compromised. And there's it's a step back and a huge, huge adjustment.
Sure. Yeah.
And as Ben got sicker, his world, he describes it as his world just got smaller and smaller. What he was able to do and how he was able to function just got smaller and smaller. So
and then the frustration involved for him with that, along with the emotional part, you know, along with, you know, beating himself up for, you know, I can't do what I used to do. But then there's also that chronic fatigue of, I just don't give a darn anymore. I can't even, you know, I give up, yeah. I give in, you know, I surrender.
Yeah.
You know, but so it's, you know, also you have to, as you talked about, Sarah, in caregiving, you use the caregiver. You have to really do things for yourself and take that time. When you can find it, get some support from the community. But, you know, you talked about the meditations.
Yeah.
That you did. So
our community was wonderful. The kids were wonderful.
I'm sure.
Family Zoom sessions. My book group from when I'd lived in Ohio 10 years earlier, when they started meeting virtually, they reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to be part of book group again? So that was awesome.
Yay.
A bunch of women I'd gone to college with 30 years or more than that, many years earlier. We started Zooming every 3 weeks. Ben's college roommates were Zooming with me. Oh, at least every 10 days.
That is wonderful. That's so important to have that. And of course there's in our communities, there's the outreach programs, you know, there's caregiver support groups all over the place. I know here, you know, in Southern California, that can help folks out there who are dealing with what you have dealt with. But, and it's also that feeling, I think, within us as caregivers of being sort of helpless. What else can I do? Well, not much. I think, okay, let's go over the list again. And, you know, and then you just.
At one point when we were having some pretty brutal conversations of what would you want on your tombstone?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
The boys said, well, I know what we'd put on mom's. And I said, what would you put on my stone? Yeah. And they said, I'm only an English major, but and it would be dot, dot, dot. You know, my answer to everything, like, do you really think that's a good, I'm only an English major, but do you really think that's a good idea? Whatever it is that you're doing.
you're so funny.
Yeah.
I love it. But you learned a lot about medicine. Yeah. You're a rock star. You have to, right? You have to learn.
Yeah.
You know,
I've forgotten most of it now, but in the moment I knew what I needed to know. Yeah.
Sure. Exactly. You know, so give yourself some space and grace as a caregiver out there, folks. If you are, you know, caregivers of a loved one in some way, or your BF or your spouse who can be both your partner, and you have to, as you know, Sarah Cart was talking about, you have to take time to gather your own thoughts and your own emotions and ground yourself, as you did, Sarah, in meditation. But also, wait a minute, I need some space. And I just want to sit outside on the patio and clarify thoughts and or no thoughts. Right. And not even have to meditate, just sort of stare at the sky.
Right. And be forgiving of yourself. There is no way to do this perfectly. Mistakes are going to be made, and you just need to pick up and keep going. Just be supportive and forgiving of yourself, and supportive and forgiving of people who are trying to help you and just are awkward because they don't know how.
Yes. Yes. And how did you find, you talk about finding gratitude. Woo, that's hard to find those glimpses of gratitude.
I've had some amazing examples of what we were going through. I knew that we were not the first people to go through what we were going through. I really felt it was our turn. I'd watched my dad. When my mom was sick, my mom died at age 60 and had been sick for 3 years. I watched my sister become a widow at 47, similarly after 18 months of being a caregiver. My brother had died after a 9-month illness, and I'd watched my sister-in-law handle that. And it just, my examples of grit and grace and faith were very close to me. And I know now when I wake up in the night because Ben is snoring, I think of my sister and my sister-in-law and what they would give for the annoyance of having best friend.
That's right. you think about all those things, you know, you know, what they would give.
Yeah. I mean, a huge part of it is we're not the only one. Everybody is going through something. And in the scheme of things, I have a roof over my head and we had food in the fridge. And I had a support network that I could fall back onto as a safety net if things really went the way we thought they were going to go.
So. Sure. Sure. And you also emphasize the importance of physical touch, because sometimes when we get so overwhelmed with having to juggle all the balls, we kind of forget we're running around and we're in and out of the room and we're, you know, it's like the physical touch and just sort of being there and taking that time. And that's so important. And that's healing too. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, you know, all the studies about, you know, physical.
That was the hard part when he was away for 10 weeks, what I would have given to just be allowed to go give him a kiss on the forehead, even through a mask. But
especially in the COVID,
I was not the only person. Everybody who had a loved one in the hospital during COVID, or people who had family in assisted living and they couldn't visit. I mean, everybody was going through something. We just happened to be going through a unique version of it.
Yes, exactly. It's so true. I mean, it was such a difficult time, and boy, you guys were right in the middle of it and you got through it, which is brilliant. Really lovely. Something else you talk about, which I enjoyed in your book, another positive, is how important keeping your sense of humor is, you know, and sometimes when you're in the thick of it and you're caregiving and you're running around and you're juggling everything, it's sort of like, you've got to remember that there is sometimes you have to laugh at yourself or laugh at and say, I can't even.
we'd still do it. Yeah. A good laugh is a good thing to be able to generate. As Ben was learning how to walk again after he finally got his hip replaced, he had to learn everything. He had to learn how to, and he'd come home from physical therapy and show me whatever it was. And it's just amazing how simple everything can suddenly become, how grateful you can become for the littlest thing. So the day he came home and he could do reciprocal steps, you know, one foot right after the other without having to come up, and he was so excited about it. So now if we get a little snippy with each other, if one of us gets the moment to take a breath and go, oh, now, wait a minute, look at me doing reciprocal steps. It sucks the tension out of the room, and like a balloon that's just gone crazy.
I hear you. Oh my gosh, it really does. And, you know, also with other family members, you know, the little bit of humor and kind of relieving that stress as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really, there is something about going through the experience that you went through. And the book, On My Way Back to You, One Couple's Journey Through Catastrophic Illness and From Healing to Hope. Here it is, Sarah Cart. Brilliant book. Wonderful read. Captivating story, and it has a good happy ending as well. I'll just be a spoiler alert person. But what advice would you give to people who are in this predicament right now, who are trying to be caregivers of a loved one, not even necessarily a spouse or partner, but, you know, who are sort of stuck in this situation and just flabbergasted, don't know what to do, overwhelmed?
Breathe. sounds very easy, but breathe.
Yeah. Yes.
For me, there were the panic times. I would try to exhale all the bad stuff, the fear, the anger, the grief, like pick up the thesaurus and all the bad stuff, just breathe it out. I would breathe out until my lungs were like a sponge that I'd gotten all the water out of.
Yes.
And then I would try to breathe in.
Right.
Good, confidence, joy, strength, power. And then breathe out again, doubt. I mean, just inferiority, whatever it was that was strangling me. That was huge. And you could just do it three or four times, it could turn my head around. And getting your head in the right place, even if it's just for a moment, can help with almost any crisis. And sometimes getting it in the right place for only a moment is the only thing you can do multiple times over the course of an hour. Right. If things are really going badly.
Sure.
You will get through this. I used to say you are strong enough for this, but you don't. Strong implies judgment, knowledge of yourself that you don't have necessarily, but you will get through this one step at a time. And some of those steps are going to be backwards. Sometimes they're going to be backwards 10, 20 steps in a row, but you just have to keep getting up. It's like the tub thumping song from the 1990s. Right. I get knocked down and I get up again. You just have to keep getting up again. And there's really no point in doing anything but thinking the best of it. If the best doesn't work out, well, at least for those however many hours you were thinking it was going to be better than this, those hours were better for your having done that.
Mm.
We tend to highlight bullet points in life, births, yes, weddings, engagements, graduations, but mm-hmm. life really is all the stuff that it's the grout in between. and you just need to make the most of those moments in between.
So. Beautifully said. How's Ben doing?
He's doing great. He's doing so well that more than frequently he annoys me, and it is.
Oh, I love that. Good for you.
Yeah. Every once in a while, it's really annoying, and I need to be happy about this.
Yes, exactly. Thank goodness for that loud snoring.
Exactly right.
Hey, exactly what right. I did. You always have earplugs. Those are magnificent. You know. Tools. We use tools, don't we?
We do. A noise-making machine, all kinds of things.
Yeah. That's right. Well, we're just about out of time already, Sarah, but thank you so much for writing this beautiful book. It's a joy that you can share your journey with other people and how you both have come through it with flying colors. It's on my way back to you. And it's a memoir about her journey and also her husband Ben's journey about catastrophic illness and how to heal and have hope and get through it. Wonderful, wonderful stories. And of course, how it affects our kids, you know, and how it affects the other relatives and the things you can do for yourself to take care of you. Sarah, what's the best way that listeners and viewers could find out about you and get your book?
The book is available at your local bookseller, can order it for you, or you can get it through Amazon. It's available as a Kindle version or an audiobook as well. And to find out more about it, you can go to www.onmywaybacktoyou.com. And if people leave messages there, the tech savvy people in my life, let me know and I respond.
There you go. Well, this time has gone way too fast and we could have covered a lot more, but I think we really nailed some of the important points here. And thank you so much for being such a great guest. I really appreciate all that you do, Superwoman, and all that you do to share with other people.
Well, thank you. This has been a pleasure. It's wonderful talking with you.
You too. Take good care, both of you.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining me today. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. That's the way it works in the world, especially in Sarah Cart's case as well. Thanks for joining me on the couch. Dr. Michelle, out.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.